With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. It's the Sam Duckworth, aka Get Cape, Wear Cape, Fly episode, and it's part two. If you've come here first, firstly, go and have a look at yourself. Why have you started with part two? Go back and listen to part one. But if you are here for part two, then I'm not going to bore you with any more waffle. Let's get straight back into where we left off at the end of episode one. Please enjoy part two of Off the Beaten Track podcast with Sam Duckworth. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. And in addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. We can jump straight back in. We've just had a quick break for a wee. And before we stopped, I asked you about, you mentioned that you was reading negative stuff about you in the press and you know, the critique of your music wasn't always favourable and asked how you dealt with that.
Yeah, I tried to find as many ways to run from it. And then you have to kind of go, okay, are these things justified? Some of them were, some of them still to this day. I'm like, could you? I just wish, like, The Guardian would not have referred to me as a chubby teenager. Like, everyone thought it was really funny, but it sucked. Like, I used to read that newspaper, you know, to get my diet of information, and I was like really anti-tabloid and anti all that stuff. And then I saw it, and I was like, cool, okay. Like, unnecessary, unhelpful, true, but unnecessary and unhelpful. And, you know, so eventually kind of got to grips with all of that. And you know, so I was working with Cooking Vinyl, and they were just so good. You know, they backed me to do whatever I wanted, really. And so my mindset was changing and just feeling more positive. And I was just like, you know what, like some of these things are right, some of these things are wrong, but also I'm young, like who cares? Like I'm going to be doing this forever. Like it's not that long. And then I got sick. And then that was like, okay, cool, everything's changed now.
Mentally?
No, I picked up a parasite when I was in Malawi and I got really, really ill. And ended up in hospital like via ambulance like 4 times in a week and then had surgery and all of that. And turns out, you know, there's a parasite that I picked up from water. But you just, you know, you go through all the emotions and all of that stress and upheaval and start looking at life differently. You know, and I think
that's... Positively?
Don't know, is the honest answer. Like, I'm not one to be like, I'm looking at everything so positively because I'm quite all or nothing with my positivity. Like I can't fake it if I don't feel it. And sometimes if I'm feeling an overwhelming sense of something, it becomes dominant whether I like it or not. And I really have to try and pull myself out of it. And sometimes I can't. But lots of people are like that. I think that is just being a product of a world where you're completely confronted by the balance of, you know, are you having emotions? Are you having thoughts? You know, all these things you're reading, what do they mean? You know, look at all of this stuff. Look at everybody. Where does my life compare to theirs? Like, it's just too much, you know. Like, you're bound to have moments where you just go, can't deal with this anymore. Like, need a bit of a break. And I had a really enforced one. And it was quite a significant period of time. And it's taken years to kind of get everything back from the combination of being ill and like being in a bubble, you know, and when the bubble bursts and like the bubble in the economy bursting at the same time. And, you know, I think we're at the end of capitalism. I think that it's failed. It's over. It's wrecked the planet. It's wrecked our mindsets. And I think it's time for something new. And that's been my, you know, when I got sick, I got into this project called the Dark Mountain, which is very much about this exact same thing, you know, that, and it was a big influence on me, the idea that infinite growth, but with finite resources, is not a sustainable way for any civilization to live. And that concept permeates everywhere. Like, the technological revolution that we're in at the moment will be halted when we run out of cassiterite and coltan, and when gold and copper become scarce. So it doesn't matter how much our technological progress exists, those resources will run out. The planet's, unfortunately, its demise is happening quicker. So if everything's going to collapse, democracy is, you know, everything's going to be new, it's going to be the end of capitalism, it's going to be the end of empire, it's going to be the end of, you know, all of these things, what next? And that's what drives me, because, you know, I'm still a 16-year-old punk hanging around with DIY people that come up with ideas and do them. That's all I want to be in life, you know, is some, you know, around people that think differently and just want to try things. And that's going to become more and more important when the traditional things that we hold in society, like our relationships with money, are going to change. Because, you know, when technology, you know, self-checkouts are a great example. When that technology exists everywhere, are we going to look towards universal basic income, or what's going to happen to the sudden scarcity of jobs?
I want to touch on something you mentioned a few sentences ago when you said about being sick and I think the bubble bursting. Do you think the music industry prepares young musicians for when things might not go as planned?
The music industry doesn't prepare anyone for anything. It needs to be reformed so radically. Like, the amount of people I met who used to work in the music industry that left because the music industry just crushes people, I've lost count. I think so many things that should just be basic. If, like me, you're an 18-year-old signing to a major record label, why weren't they providing me with any kind of therapy? Why did I not even know that it was even a thing until 5 years down the line? Society's changed now. Therefore, these people should be providing support and services. I know some are, I know some aren't. But if you are able to grasp the reality that you're in while you're in it, you take away an element of control from the people that are running your company. And I think there's too much manipulation of young people. Whether they, you know, some are better at it than others, but I don't know, nothing prepares you. And when you're in a world now where you can see all of the pitfalls, you can see all of the coping mechanisms, you can see all of the impacts that it's had on people's lives, you have to change it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Unfortunately, I do still think there'll be a never-ending queue of people that will say yes because they want to be famous and they just want that, that, you know, they've wrote songs and they think that by signing that contract, that's the answer. And I think that...
But for some people, that is the answer.
It is. But if you was to sign a contract for a job in, I don't know, fucking in a bank, and you become sick, there's procedures within that business to look after you to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that from the fact that, you know, at the point of when I was sick to the point of when I'd healed, 2 years out of work or 2 years out of like the same level of regular work, or, you know, it's 2 weeks into my fourth album campaign when, you know, I was literally supposed to headline Village Green. I was like, I really can't cancel the show. And they're like, you won't be able to play it. It's like, okay. You know, the difference there were organisations that were able to support, but on an industry level, it's changed a lot since then. You know, there's much more support now, there's much more services, but they're not, you know, they need to be more, better funding from the majors and from the big companies need to fund these organisations because people are turning to them more than there is capacity to be able to support the services they need to provide. And that's a failing of government, firstly, and it's a failing of industry, secondly.
Couldn't agree more. What song soundtrack do you use in Clubland, Sam?
Well, it sounds like my years in Clubland should be over. Are you making a point that, that I'm too old to
no,
go?
No, I want you to turn up at a book club in a couple of weeks and play records.
It's so funny, isn't it? Because people do, you do have your clubbing days, but
you know what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you're saying, but I'm just, you know, messing now because I sent these questions to my agents.
Right.
I was like, I'm really interested to see what you guys say because This format's really good because you have to really think about your memories at the same time as you're thinking about your music. So it's like, okay, like different eras in different clubs.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there are some of my favourite genres of music. I do feel like I'm too old to go to clubs. So I always try and, you know, go to carnival and go to festivals because it's a really good opportunity for me to hear the music at the volume that I want to hear it, but also to not feel like, you know, who's bought the dad.
Yeah.
You know, so...
How do you think I feel every week in the club, Sam?
Well...
I had a young lady come up to me when I was DJing the other week, and she went, are you Stuart Whiffin? And I went, she must have probably been about 19, 20, and I went, yeah. And I thought, ah, oh, yeah, I've still got it with the ladies. Mm-hmm. And she went, oh, my mum said to say, like, you went to school with her.
Yeah, but that's sick, mate, isn't
crushing
it?
Blow.
No, mate, like, if... that, you know, that club, if it wasn't you running it, it'd be a different,
absolutely,
it'd be a different county, and I think you know that, but you know, like, we're all gonna get old, aren't we?
Of course,
like,
mate.
Hopefully.
Yes. I'm already there, I ain't gotta worry.
I don't know.
So you said you've got different eras of clubbing. So I imagine your entry point, as you mentioned earlier, was Chinnery of the Brush and kind of
that, yeah, alternative
the
clubbing.
The alternative clubbing, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, Jim Eat World, probably, you know, Salt, Sweat, Sugar, Blood American, whatever it's called. You know, that tune is big. It's a big one, from big alternative one from the era.
And Sweetness, what a tune that is.
I mean, they're a flawless band, really. They've every so often a band creeps along and you're like, you've got 25 absolute smashes. You've got a back catalogue of gold. Jimmy have definitely got that.
Well, see, they played last year. Mm. So I'll just quickly ask you on this as well. Like, what are your thoughts on nostalgia? Bands coming back and playing that album or Like, where do you stand on that as a fan and as an artist?
As an artist, I feel excited by it because you want to be able to celebrate things that you made a long time ago and say these are still important to me and to other people. Because otherwise, you're always looking back on what you've done next. And I think that with culture, you need to look at where things have come from and where they're going. Because that journey is the journey that everybody else goes on as a fan. Yeah. So if you can't do that as an artist, it can be difficult. But also at the same, cynically, you can see why artists do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're providing something that people want to see. And it's also a good way of, diversifying your income streams.
I'm a 46-year-old man and can think of nothing more fun than hearing the Pixies play Doolittle
there we are. I remember doing the Gomez 10-year tour for Bring It On, and I remember speaking to my agents and being like, I know we were going to do headline shows, but can I do this solo instead? I love this album so much. This would be like a dream gig for me to see it. And I got to do it, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I've seen the Flame Lips do Soft Bulletin.
Oh.
Love that record. Yeah, I'm all for it. I think I used to hate nostalgia, but that's just because I was scared of getting older.
Yeah.
But now what I realise is that being older is just the same about being younger. You just know where you're going to go wrong less.
We was talking the other night on a podcast about stumbling across bands at festivals you didn't plan to see and then just being blown away. And in V96, I walked past the stage and I just thought, why was I not standing here earlier? And I just caught Tijuana Lady and just thought, fuck me, what a band.
Rhythm and Blues Alibi turned 20 this week.
Fuck.
If that came out tomorrow, the articles would be like, move over Mac DeMarco, there's some new kings in town. Like, do you know what I mean? They're so good.
Yeah.
It's so good and it's 20 years old. And if a good record can be 20 and still be something that feels like a breath of fresh air, a first record from a 20-year-old can be exactly the same.
Completely.
And I think that's why nostalgia is important, because it gives you the ability to signify things in decades.
Yeah.
And I think the older I get, the more I realise that's important. 15 years of releasing music for me next year doesn't feel unusual, but 15 years is actually quite a long time to be doing something. So instantly, I'm like, I don't want to be nostalgic, but how can I look back without feeling nostalgic? Mm. I can't. So
and you must be doing something right, mate.
I don't know if I'm doing something right. I'm just belligerent. It's the ultimate truth here.
I could do it anyway.
Yeah, well, exactly. there's no option really but to just keep going. So therefore, 15 years would be 25 years within the blink of an eye, and who knows what's going to happen in the next 10.
Become a sports writer. Oh, no, you'd like nothing more to be writing about wrestling.
I would love to write about wrestling, but one of my favourite things about being a wrestling fan and not having to do anything career-based around it is that if it's not good for a bit, I don't have to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, I listen to loads of wrestling podcasts and I've just sat through 3 hours of this. How have you managed to cope with it? Not well. Yeah, me too. Like, you just listen to them because you can be like, okay, that's the stuff I'm going to watch rather than...
Okay. All right, so fast forward from the alternative clubbing... And then obviously Get Cape explodes as a band and as your career takes off. And then I'm imagining there must have been a lot of parties and clubs to go to. What kind of makes you think of them times?
I think of Optimo in Glasgow.
Nice.
What a club. Like, ludicrous behaviour. Every single time you go there, you just hear tunes and you'd be like, wow, that is okay, everything's different now. I've heard that. Incredible DJs. Like, that period of time in music was very exciting because dance music and guitar music were both successful at the same time
and crossing over,
and that's the key, is that you could have a bit of both and it feel fine and it works. I was so lucky to have been around that, Pure Groove, Holloway Road, the amount of clubs and nights that they put on, and I'll just hear stuff. I'd be like, okay, cool, that's changed everything. When there was a night on Shoreditch High Street, for the life of me, can't remember. Is this going to be edited? Can I?
No, yes, I'm not going to edit it.
I'm not going to edit it. I'm racking through my memory here, trying to remember stuff. Wow. But yeah, they're just knights. It's a French label. I can't remember. It's
not Kitsune.
It wasn't Kitsune. It was
Ed Banger.
It was Ed Banger. That was it. They'd have knights on.
What, Sebastian and stuff like that?
You'd go and see, you know, things in a club in 200, 300 capacity, and you'd hear records before they come out, and your mind would explode. You know, that whole era was incredible. You know, it was modular. With the Knights. Like, they were just incredible. Like, they
it's a label as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and like, you know, from like Wolf Mother through.
Yeah.
So, you know, like Wolf Mother, a perfect example of those two.
Were Good Shoes signed to Modular?
I think they were,
yeah.
They were a great band, weren't they? Mm. I remember that Modern Life is Rubbish tube posters and thinking that is, like, you guys have smashed it so hard.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a great pun. And, like, they were a really, really good band. Like, really. I remember, like, Good Shoes and the Astoria and stuff like that, and just proper.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for that time, I mean, the record that I listened to the most was LCD Sound System, Sound of Silver. It's just one album.
Mm.
And all my friends, people would play that tune at the end of the night, and you know, that was the closer for so many nights. So that song, to me, it's like, it's perfect.
It really is a fucking perfect record. Mm. And there's, when I saw the trailer for the LCD Sound System film, have you watched that?
Interesting sidebar about that film. The reason that I both ended Get Cape and then came back is completely based on what they did.
On James Murphy?
I was watching it resonating, being like, I feel your pain, man. Like, I'm going to do this too. Like, you know, I was really inspired by the idea of ending something on a high.
One last high.
And then also at the same time then being like, oh no, that was
really
not
good.
A good idea, was it? It's like, all we did was we proved that we could do what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
Actually, why don't we just come back and do that?
Yeah.
You know.
And just seeing that trailer and that song, and I think there's a huge amount of pretentiousness to James Murphy, and I love him for it.
Yeah, me too.
But that song being used just in that trailer, and it just cut into Arcade Fire, doing the harmonies as well, it's like, I've got goosebumps just talking about it. It was, that song is fucking remarkable.
That song is remarkable. That era of that band is remarkable. That film is remarkable. Like, when they're putting the gear in the lockup for the last time, I'm just like crying. Going,
yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Like, perfect. Absolutely perfect.
What did you want from clubbing, Sam?
I love the music. You know, like, DJ Marky, LK, that is a huge, huge tune that has influenced more of my musical decision making. You know, same with like Shy FX, you know, like jungle, drum and bass, garage as well, Wookiee, you know, stuff like that influences what I want to do as a musician more than anything else, clubland, really. You know, because it's bold and it's punky, it's got elements of jazz, you know, melodically strong, good bass lines. So if I go to a club, I want the sound system to be good so I can hear it and feel it.
Yeah.
And everything else I take or leave. I'm not really bothered.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm going to have a good time because I'm hearing good tunes.
Yeah.
So as long as I'm hearing tunes where some are familiar and some aren't, like, that's what I want from a, like, electronic clubland, is I want to be surprised and I want to feel familiar. And I think that
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Like ShyFX, this culture thing that he's got going on at the moment is so unbelievably exactly what I want as a club. Like, you've got legends, you've got people in their own lane, doing their own thing, completely flipping everything on its head. It being about a culture rather than it being about the individual.
Yeah.
You know, it's the perfect club, you know, for me. Like,
yeah.
So, someone goes to me, if you go to any club, where would you go in the world? It'd be Sir Lloyd Sound System, Monday, Notting Hill Gate. You know, like, Notting Hill Carnival is amazing, but that stage, last 10 years, seems some mind-blowing stuff. That's what I want. I want to be dancing and thinking and feeling and all that all at the same time.
Let's come outside of London and let's come back to Essex. Track 6, favourite song from an artist from your home county?
There's favourite artists from this county that I have, you know, but it's got to be Billy Bragg. Like, that... There's something that's really funny that I've... As a fan of Billy Bragg, I have different waves of fandom. Sometimes I'm like, can't stop listening to it. And I think there's something about the Essex blokiness of it, Essex bloke with a heart, that sometimes really resonates with me and sometimes I don't connect with. But when it resonates with me and it feels like a poet from, you know, from home.
Yep.
And I think Levi Stubbs' Tears is just vivid, it's emotional, it's a brilliant song, and it's so unmistakably Essex.
When the world falls apart, something stays in place. Oh,
just
amazing.
You know, like, it's flawless. And he plays it now and it's flawless.
Yeah.
And he's gone from being, you know, young, brash, solo punk to being Uncle Bill.
Mm.
And the whole of his fan base and the world has evolved with him.
Yep.
And I think he's become a real, you know, important part of the fabric of what it means to be a thinker from Essex.
And as a 46-year-old man, I remember first hearing Levi Stubbs. I remember hearing the first album I owned... by him was, what's it called? Talking to the Taxman about poetry. Mm. And hearing Valentine's Day is Over, She's Got a New Spell, Rotting on Remand, just hearing these songs, I was like, he sounds like my mates, and he's just talking in a language that I understand, and he's saying smart shit as well. This is like, this is incredible. And to grow up with him, to then hear him have children and write songs like Brickbat, which, are you familiar with Brickbat? I used to want to plant bombs at the last night at the proms, and now you'll find me with a baby, with the big shell, by the bath, with the big shell, listening to the sounds of the sea. Fucking hell, man. Like, and, you know, as a man that had just had children, hearing that and just looking back on how your life changes. And, you know, it's not just you. Everyone else is doing this stuff as well. And Billy Bragg's doing it, and he's saying it perfectly. It's like that guy is, if not one of my favourite recording artists. I think the guy is just incredible. And he's just ageing like a fucking fine wine. Like, love him.
He's smashing it because he is the establishment and anti-establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a hard line to walk when you are, you know, a radical, but you're also a spokesperson for the radical. It's difficult. Like, I think the thing that I really respect about him is his consistency.
Yeah.
You know, that is hard. It's hard to be constantly looking to build up and to support and to fight for, you know, working class Britain. But also at the same time be, you know, a best-selling author and have loads of gold discs knocking about.
Yeah.
Like, you can't it's a hard balance to struggle, but he smashes it. And I think that he knows that there's generations coming through, and what they do at the left field, you know, it's important because it solidifies the old and the new. Like a lot of my line of thinking at the moment is based on this artistic group of expressionists from Germany called De Brücke, which is a bridge. It's about building a bridge between old culture and new futures. And I think that that is happening all around us in the UK. And I think with political songwriting, every single one of us has done a show with Billy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, you know, from Pip, Beans on Toast, Frank Turner, you know, Grace Petrie, Sean McGowan. You know, there's a whole, you know, go on and on, but that new culture, you know, he's looked after every single one of us in a different way. He's taught us things, and that's exactly what you'd hope and expect him to do.
Yeah.
And the fact that he does that, you know, I think that's where he maybe doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah,
his songs and his lyrics, people are really starting to realise that he was one of the greats. But as a human being and as a custodian of protest music, he's also one of the greats in that sense too.
Do you think people have assumptions and preconceptions of you when you tell them you're from Essex?
Yeah, probably. I think it's difficult not to have preconceptions of people from Essex.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. What do you think they are?
I think what's interesting for me is when you meet somebody that grew up in Essex or it's from Essex but doesn't live in Essex anymore,
mm-hmm.
That's where you get the most preconceptions.
Okay.
Because people are, you're going to be bold and brash and like,
yeah,
you know, trying to do like harebrained schemes. It's like, yep, shoe fits.
Yeah.
You know, that's Essex. You know, but I think when you meet when you meet people that aren't from Essex and they see the, you know, the sugar hut culture of, you know, if that's what Essex is, I think because I've got long hair and look pretty scruffy, people aren't assuming that I'm going to be part of that sugar hut world.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't even wear a watch, let alone, you know, rolling with a big one on my wrist. Yeah. So I think I don't get that same judgment. I think people feel sorry for me and I just think, okay, cool. Like,
but you mentioned that people that no longer live in Essex maybe have that preconception that you know, you're a creative coming up with these kind of harebrained schemes to pursue these, you know, these ideas. I'm interested in that because I'd probably say I'm that.
Yeah, you definitely are.
And do you think that any of that stems from living really close to London but not living in London and feeling like you've got to kind of put your head above the crowd in Essex? I don't know how to explain what I'm trying to say, Sam. I don't know if you have any idea where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I think the proximity to London is fascinating to me because everybody is moving to, like, we'll move to Surrey or to Kent, you know, going to the other side of the estuary, into Margate and to Folkestone because it's close to London. But Essex is closer.
Mm.
So why not here?
Mm.
That, to me, is fascinating. You know, that shows that there is obviously... People are so scared to go to Essex. It's hilarious. People are like, I've only been to Essex once. I really want to go to the beach. You've got to travel 3 hours away. It's like, really? You're going to speak to somebody that can walk to a beach in 5 minutes and tell them that you've got to travel 3 hours or you've got to go to Brighton because there's no beaches?
Yeah.
What you're saying is you don't want to go to Essex. And I get that because, you know, you're going to have to post it on Instagram and you don't want people to know that you've come there. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of one-way traffic. The ideas come from flow up the estuary into London. They're, you know, they're big pockets of Essex ideas that are in London, and then, you know, people have kids and move back.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really strange thing of like, you go to London to make your dreams come true, and then when your dreams have come true, you come back and buy the house by the sea and make sure you can get your kids into a good school. It's great. Everyone's grown up on that mentality around here. I think it's commuter living. Satellite towns all have the same mentality that opportunity and future exists elsewhere. But I don't think that applies culturally anymore. I think it's hard for cultural people, creative people, to live in London. It's really expensive. No way you could have a studio like this in London. Not possible. And as that becomes more and more of a factor, it's not a bad thing that Essex isn't having the same rapid gentrification process.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, like, the stigmas that we have to overcome are things that we should be proud of, to be honest. Like, if you want to blame the history of Essex music on anyone, you blame it on the Feelgoods. Like, they kicked the ball rolling for all radical music to come in such a unique way that they are kind of your favourite band's favourite band's favourite band, three generations in. You know, the Feelgoods had such a big impact on everything. But, you know, they got a rep. And that's the same rep that exists with, you know, existed with the Prodigy. You know, all the Essex bands, you know, left of centre, left of culture, because you can be mainstream culture in London.
Yeah.
If you're in Essex, you kind of got a bit more scope. But, you know, and it's hard, the lines are harder. You know, it's some, I think London, you can feel comfortable everywhere you go. I think Essex has still got that tribalness to it. There are pubs that maybe it's not a good idea for me to go to. Or, like, there are clubs that other people that I go to that don't want to come to because they're not sure. Yeah, I think suburban towns have that still.
But that makes the good clubs the best clubs, right?
Gives everyone a home base. You know, as long as... the thing, you know, same thing of coming back to that cross-pollination thing you were talking about with football. It, as long as people can go to, you know, you can go to Brush for an indie night, but then we'd also go to, you know, down the seafront for some garage.
Yeah.
We'd do that twice a week. It was possible to do both and didn't feel uncomfortable in either.
Yeah.
But I think if you were coming from London to that, you'd be really shocked that people have a duplicity of, like, they'll, you know, they have an outfit to wear if they go down Marine Parade and they'll have an outfit to wear to the Brush.
Yeah. Last track, DJ Sam. This is your opportunity to play. Play it being John Kennedy and try and turn people onto new music. A song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
It's not very new.
Hasn't got to be new.
So it's Colonial Mentality, Fela Kuti.
Okay.
It was almost my best intro because it's maybe 4 minutes in before you get some vocals. I just love it. I think one thing that I love about Fela Kuti in particular is that so many people assume that political music is like protest music or guitar-based music. But, you know, you can look at everything from, you know, Rage Against the Machine, you know, right the way through to everything that was coming out of the Hacienda and that culture. It's different types of politics. It's social politics. It's, you know, techno in Detroit. All of these things are about reconfigurations of boundaries and of you know, what happens in society. And Fela is the son of a, you know, revolutionary activist, made songs of real radical songs about politics. But you listen to it, it's just pure party. Like, it's just such a good groove. Like, Tony Allen to me is the best drummer.
Did you listen to the interviews with him on Six at the weekend?
No. Tony?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, I'm definitely listening to that. This is good. It's kind of like a little show to get some recommendations for myself. He is so good. Man, see, you know, the bookending, I think it's fitting to bookend the show with two tracks where he's drumming on.
Yeah.
Like 25 years apart.
And those songs being?
You know, The Loretta Nell and then Colonial Mentality.
Colonial Mentality.
Okay. Which... I don't know, I think Britain is rife in the concept of colonial mentality, and I've really first learnt about it from listening to this song and then Googling it and finding things out. So it's, you know, it's a journey into an interesting mindset, and it's just a hell of a tune.
Well, I'll make sure that all of these songs are on the Spotify playlist, so every song that Sam spoke about on this, and some of the others that might not be any song choices that we did end up talking about will be on there as well. Sam, thanks loads.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers, buddy. That was worth both parts of that two-parter. It was a real joy to sit with Sam. He's, as you can obviously ignore that bit. Well, there you go. We've come to the end of the podcast. And it was a real joy. I think you can agree that Sam's obviously an absolute gent, super smart, and has an incredible passion for music. And it was a complete pleasure to talk about all of these things with him. I love spending time with Sam, and it's few and far between the time we get to hang out. So we made the most of this by giving you a two-parter. I will see you next time. In the meantime, please go and have a look in the back catalogue. And if you've rinsed that, then please go and check out my Patreon account. I put up shows each week on there as well. And if you're also got a real thirst for podcasts, then head over to podbiblemag.com, and me, Pip, and Ad will tell you all about the podcasts that you need to be checking out. And if you don't just want to read the magazine, you want to listen to our new podcast, then please do that as well. It's a brand new podcast sponsored by Audible, so please go and check that out. I will see you next week for another Off the Beaten Track. Have a lovely time. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.